It's Up the Villa, the Aussie Villains podcast. The crew is back. We'll look back at the Man U game, we'll look forward to the Wolves game, and we'll answer your questions. You can get us at Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook and our Facebook group, and get us at Aussie Villains, capital A, capital V, on Twitter as well. This is Up the Villa, the Aussie Villains podcast.
Side wasting any time. Ramsey with room and with Buendia on the run. Through it goes towards Watkins, who's down, and Moreno strikes it and finds De Gea in the way. And Aston Villa scream and shout for a penalty kick.
Well, Ollie Watkins felt he was fouled as that ball came into the penalty area, but that was beautiful play from Aston Villa.
Watkins in the middle, Ramsey here as well. Just about has it. Watkins with the spectacular. And the flag would have prevented any celebrations in any case. Casemiro's header releases Rashford. And three look to catch him. Martinez with the save. Fernandes!
Tonight, just the same as the Villa squad, a few injuries starting to take its toll. We got tests down tonight, unfortunately. But we do have Spud, Ryan and Paul. How are we, boys?
Very good, mate. How are you?
Yeah,
look, I was a little bit flat after the Man U game, which we'll cover a bit later, but not devastated or anything. I think, you know, we expected it at some stage and we didn't get thrashed. So we'll come into that. So,
yep.
All good. What about, and whether it's true or not, the sources are very, very big. What about the potential football director's role at Villa next year?
Big news, isn't it? And, you know, it's getting reported in a lot of good socials now, and it looks like it's picking up a lot of traction. And for me, it's, you know, another step in the right direction, getting a guy who's got experience at some big clubs in La Liga, has done some fantastic jobs over the years in that league. And, you know, and anyone who's worked at Barcelona and the work he's done with where they've been in the last year or two financially and what he's managed to do bringing players in is good for us. And, yeah, just happy to see the club. I would say this is an Emery and a board decision that, you know, they're working together to try and get the structure right. And it's good to see the club are sort of back in Emery and going, you know, we'll make this structure work and we'll give you what you need to be successful. So, yeah, I'm really excited by the links.
Well, before we get Spud's vision or thoughts about it, let's all try and say his name on the counts of three. So we'll go 3, 2, 1. 3, 2, 1.
Matej Alemany. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Spud, your thoughts, buddy?
I think you can't be anything but excited, you know. Like, it's I was thinking about this today at work, you know, because, you know, you and I don't read too much into it, but you see, like, you know, there's always a couple of negative Twitter comments on it, you know, and like, I mean, look, the majority is obviously very excited, but you obviously get the ones who will take up his transfer targets and lists and so on.
Yeah.
Is it really that? All I'll say is, like, you remember, like, at one point we had Remy Garde as manager and Paul Faulkner as director of football. A guy who knew absolutely nothing in football. That was real as well. That wasn't a dream or anything. That was actually happening at our football club at one point in 2000.
It was almost Mike Bassett football manager-esque.
Yeah, I mean, like, this guy has worked at the top level. And I think the best, most exciting thing about it, he's not just the director of football. He's got a degree in financial accounting as well. So he knows the ins and outs of the club. Now, we spoke about it when Unai Emery first came in. The owners would have had to make big promises to get a man with that name and reputation behind him, because that he could. I'm sure there's plenty of offers on the table for a man like Unai Emery, you know. Like, so for him to come to Villa, there must have been a lot of pull there, a lot of talk between him and the owners. And this was obviously something that he discussed. I need to bring in a football man to look after the football side of things. My football man, you know, not your football man, my football man. And this has been in the planning for a while, I think. Maybe not that specific guy, but this specific role, you know. And sometimes the stars align and a man can come available, you know. Obviously, Unai Emery's the big pull in this. Like, but to get a man like that, there obviously must be a transfer kitty there too, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you don't leave a job like Barcelona for a so-so project, if you get what I'm saying. Like, there has to be something there. Like, we know what Unai Emery's draw is. Emery kind of still feels he has something to do to prove in England, you know. And it kind of, so we know why he's there. This is kind of a job that Emery's been kind of crying out for, you know, where he gets full reign, takes a club, actually builds them up and has the funds to take them that step further. Villarreal, he done it, but he didn't quite have the funds to take it to the next level. So I think this is perfect. And then we know Johan Lange has a big, massive step into the analytics side of it, which Wes Eden is huge on with the American sport background, you know. Yeah. And it's something Wes Eden has spoke about many a times. So basically, they're just building a team, because it does take a team. Like, it doesn't take, you can't just rely on one man to build a whole club. Like, it just doesn't happen like anymore, you know.
I think there's so many layers to this, and you guys have covered it really well. The first layer is the experts out there bagging the choice and saying he's from Barcelona, he oversaw their financial debacles. No, he hasn't. Oh, yes. He's been cleaning up a mess that was created well before he was there. So let's put that one to bed. Yeah. He didn't create the mess. He's been cleaning it up as well as he can. Secondly, I believe this is the biggest signing in Villa's last 20 or 30 years, along with Emery. This is out of this world. Any other club in the Premier League would be absolutely bubbling with excitement about this. This is, I don't think I'm overstating it. This is a game changer for us. We dream of being in the top four. These are the moves you have to make, because we've got money.
Yeah,
it's a big
statement of intent, isn't it? And when you know, I know you're reading some of this stuff on socials, but you know, a lot of outlets are reporting that Barcelona obviously couldn't match the offer, etc. So it goes to show that, you know, the Villa board are going hard, and they're going to get their man for Emery, and like you say, backing him in, which is really pleasing. And as Spud touched on, we need that structure there, and we need to build a structure around Emery so he can focus on day-to-day running of the team, managing the team, getting us ready for games, but then has that structure behind him that can be, you know, the two steps in front, you know, the next players coming into the club, the young players going out of the club on loan, etc. And yeah, it's a massive operation. I was near a football club.
It also frees Perslow up to just concentrate on the commercial side of it. Like, I mean, his job is not to be involved in transfer, but he has to be, because the setup is so small at the moment. They're obviously trying to take a bit of pressure off him too, because he's really, really good at the other side of it. And he's obviously going to be very busy coming up now with the change in Winton Stations, trying to fight the council on that, the redevelopment of Villa Park, the application now that they've been accepted for the bid to host the Euros, which we might think that's a small thing. To be one of those clubs accepted to host that between the Ireland and England bid is huge. Old Trafford didn't get it. Anfield didn't get it. It's massive that Villa Park got it. And I know that's a lot to do with the fact that we're from the second city or whatever, you know, but it's still huge. It's massive for the club to be doing that. Like, once you start getting that, you can start applying to host Europa Leagues and stuff, you know.
Well, let's put the big picture together. Let's put some of the pieces of the puzzle together. We are one of the only clubs that still has a fully functioning youth academy, looking at the grounds and the fields there, imagine building stands around that. There'd be clubs around the world who would be envious of that. So we do have the ability to have a pathway. We have a club, it's Portugal, isn't it? Sorry, we have a club in Portugal. We are looking at expanding into the US.
Egypt.
Yes, Egypt, absolutely.
I heard Senegal mentioned as well.
Yes, and expanding into the US, and don't mistake how many fantastic African players there still are that are unsighted, and which is so exciting. So we've got the financial acumen, we've got the financial backing, we've got a stadium that is building with facilities around it, which will be amazing, and it'll be in our lifetime. We have the best manager we've had in decades. There can be no downside to what we're going through now, and I just cannot believe this is all happening within 1 year. It feels like 10 years ago that, and I don't want to put Gerard down anymore, but it feels like 10 years ago that kind of debacle was happening. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this is,
yeah.
I feel like we've won Lotto three times over. This, as a Villa supporter, we could not have, forget Europe this year, whether we make Europe or not, I hope we do. But the next few years, we're setting ourselves up for our kids to have amazing Villa experiences and their kids.
I think that's a great point, Paul, as well, because I know it's easy to throw mud at them, but it is the prime example. Like, I think our owners, as you said, they're very rich, like, but they're also understanding it takes more than money. Like, and PSG and Chelsea are our prime example of that. Like, it takes more than money. You still need to have the right men in there getting the decision. You can't just do a Todd Bowley and throw 100 million out, and it's not guaranteed. Like, I used to kind of disrespect a little bit what Man City done, but then when you look at what PSG, they can't get it right at all. So maybe you do have to give Man City a bit of respect. Like, yes, it's easy for them to buy players, but they also have a massive structure in place to make sure it all works, you know?
I think you're right. And I do want to, this is a Villa podcast, of course, but I do want to touch on, first of all, Haaland's amazing season, 35 goals that he got to this morning, still has 5 games in hand. He's broken the Premier League all-time record. He hasn't broken the Division One record, of course, but he's broken the Premier League record. He's 22 years of age. And also, they scored their 1,000th goal under Pep. This is just remarkable. Remarkable football we're seeing, and we'll look back on this, and whether we like City or not, this is just absolutely next world kind of stuff.
Well, I think it is relevant, though. Like, you know, you were saying, well, it's a Villa pod. I think it is relevant at the moment, because I think a lot of what we're seeing in our structure has already been done at Man City, where they've taken the sporting directors from Barcelona, the directors of football. They've bought clubs around the world. They've invested in their academy. They've invested in the local community. So it's a structure our owners have obviously looked at, and it does work.
Yeah. Like, it's sustainable. It is sustainable.
Where they've scored 1,000 goals in 404 games. I don't care how rich you are, like, that's incredible.
Yeah, and that does, you know, you look at the job Pep's done there, and you compare that to, say, the way Chelsea have gone about their business of recent times. Like you're saying, it's all good having that money and buying a load of talented players, but that's nothing without the right man driving that and, you know, and setting those standards and setting that team up. And you can just see that's the sort of direction that our board is looking at now. They're looking at the sort of Man City model, the Barcelona model. Going after guys who've been at these big clubs and bringing them to our club is a good thing for us. They've got that experience, and we're trying to sort of bring that across as we build and hopefully get to, you know, back into European competitions and hopefully Champions League at some point. But, it's an exciting time to be a Villa fan, isn't it?
Well, I'm going to bring you guys down. I'm putting the pin in the balloon. I'm not popping the balloon, but I'm going to deflate it. We were flat against Manchester United. We lost 1-0. I thought we had our chances, boys. I do think we were good enough. We weren't great, but I think we were good enough to get a point. I thought we were good enough to get a point watching the game, but we weren't great.
I think before we go any further, we can all agree Man United won the battle tactically, hands down.
Yes.
As I said to you, like, before, what I like to do, I like to watch a match live as a supporter, but then after, like, a day or two later, I like to sit down and watch the game, knowing the result with the emotion taken out of it, and start to watch what I can see was going on. Just to try it for much, just that's what I like to do, you know, and because you can't really get your head around that so much while you're watching the game live, you know, because you're invested in it emotionally, like, you know, but so I like to do that. And I just want to say, like, what whoever came up with it, whether it was Ten Hag, his coaching staff, what they came up with to deal with Alex Moreno, I thought was just brilliant. Like, there's absolutely no person of podcast level, anyway, I'm not talking about Unai Emery, maybe he would have spotted, you know, but there's no one would have guessed that Casemiro would have been on Jacob Ramsey, not Douglas Luiz.
Yes.
Like, obviously, if I was the manager of Aston Villa in the morning, setting up for a game like that, I'd be like, right, they're obviously going to put Casemiro on Luiz to stop him dictating the play. Like, that would be what you'd think of it. But no, Ten Hag put him on Jacob Ramsey, put an extra midfielder in Sabitzer, brought him in out from the cold again, put him in there, gave us an extra man in midfield. So they had deep runners with Bruno and Sabitzer. But then what it also allowed to do, allowed Dalot and Bruno Fernandes to double up in Mourinho. It was brilliant. It was like, you have to give him credit.
Yeah.
We're a bit playing with our hands tied behind our back because Emery can't change things too much at the moment because of the injuries we have.
Even just doesn't have it there.
Yeah.
But I just think you have to give United a bit of credit there. And the thing that excites me most about it is we couldn't really change the match, but the players gave enough that they still made it a tough game for United. Mm-hmm. So tactically, they were second best, you know, but they still gave a huge account to themselves.
Yeah, we would have lost that game 3-0 a few months ago.
100%.
I don't know if you guys have watched Ice Age much, but why did Scrat have to score the winning goal?
It had to be him, didn't it? And his celebration in front of the Villa fans as well, obviously. And I think, you know, like you were just saying, Paul, in recent years, we would have been 3-0 down by halftime in a game like that. And what's really pleasing is, you know, recent performances against Fulham and Bournemouth sort of pointed to us getting a bit leggy and a bit jaded. We know we haven't been rotating the squad, so we've sort of seen it come in. But again, we were in that game at the end there and could have snatched a point. And, you know, the effort from the players, fantastic. And, you know, we are running with a small squad, but, you know, four games left and we're still in the hunt for Europe. So pretty amazing position to be in.
And you can't accuse, nobody can accuse those players of not giving it their all. It was literally just down to heavy legs. You could see they gave everything. Like, it's just, they were just a yard off it towards United. They were second best at everything. And as you said, we still could have taken a point. That's a massive positive.
100%. And Mourinho's been our biggest outlet, isn't he, attacking wise down that left for, you know, pretty much since he's come in. That's sort of where a lot of our, you know, attacking football has come from. And like you say, Ten Hag just sort of knew if we can stop that, we've got a good chance of stopping Villa. So it's going to be interesting to see the reaction now from Emery going into the Wolves game, I guess, to see what sort of, if he makes any changes and going forward, if a team does set up like that to nullify Mourinho, where does he make his changes?
Yeah.
And we will come to that towards the end of the pod. We'll have a look at that as well. But we have had some, look, we can cover anything else you want in that game. I just think we were flat. There wasn't too many winners. I thought Mings and Martinez played as well as they could be expected to. I am a bit concerned about Buendia again. We brought it up in the last pod. I just think there's something wrong with his attitude at the moment. And he just seems very cranky with everyone. It's just the way I see it anyway.
He's a great player. He's definitely talented there. But like, when things aren't going well, like, he must be a nightmare to play with. As in, like, you know, when things are going well and he's clicking, he's a dream to play with. Like, because he does. Look, Lucas again, prime example. Brentford, he was pretty good. You know, he creates space for the players around him. But when he's not at it and his head isn't, he loses focus on the game. And it seems to happen when we need him most, if you know what I mean. We need someone to dig in the heels and start getting on the ball and creating space for the others when other things aren't happening for us. But he seems to kind of roll with the mood. If we're struggling, he struggles. Like,
we have said plenty of positives about him as well. Like,
what I'm saying. When things are going well,
he's an important
player. Like,
we don't want to be seen as a pod that's always lambasting our players, but when they need to be called out, we have noticed this trend in the last couple of weeks with him, and it has been something since he's been at Villa that every now and again, you're right, it pops up. Hey guys, we got some good questions from our Twitter feed, which is at Aussie Villains, capital A, capital V, at Aussie Villains. Jay Morgan, JRL Morgan, he said, gambling companies on shirts, how relatable are they in Australia? As in, are they allowed in Oz sport? And do you recognise any of them that trade in Oz? Gambling on AFL, NRL, A-League shirts has been there. All our main sports, our basketball is very big in Australia, in the NBL. So gambling companies in the last few years, not only on shirts, Jay, but on all our coverages, there will be pre-game, there will be discussions about who you should back during the game. Yes, they have warnings afterwards. Our shirts have had gambling on them for years, and alcohol sponsors and so forth. But I suppose how relatable gambling companies on shirts. There has been times where I personally haven't bought Aston Villa shirts because of the gambling companies on there. The other boys wouldn't know this, but I hate it. I don't think it's, you know, it was only a few years ago they stopped putting them on kids' shirts, which I couldn't believe they did that for a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. That was insane. And look, unfortunately, in Australia, Jay, gambling is seen as this fun pastime, but it's actually so bad here that in Australia we've got the per capita, the most amount of pokie machines in the world. We have more gambling companies. Every single pub I know around the world, it's not the same. In every single pub, there is a pub tab, which is a, you know, TAB gambling.
Ladbrokes type thing.
Yeah, I mean, no problem with gambling and people who do it. That's fantastic. But I think it's really insidious to have it as much as we do in sport, because the kids do see it and they'll say, "Dad, what's that?" And they do. And they start to ask questions about it. And I don't think we should be exposing our kids to gambling through the clubs they love. I'm sorry to take that onto a bit of a soapbox, but I bloody hate it, Jay. But just your point of view there, and I'll come over to you as well, Rhino, just what your thoughts are about gambling companies on shirts as well.
Yeah, it's funny, like, it's actually a very, really relevant question, because I assume because you're asking in Australia, then Jay must be either in the UK or Ireland or whatever. So I'll touch off like my experience. Like, I like a football bet, I won't lie. I have complete control of it. But the thing is, when I moved over here 14 years ago, like, Rhino, you know it, like, growing up in Ireland and the UK, like, you can't gamble in the pubs. So you have to literally go into the next door. No, don't get me wrong, they always try and send them up close to a pub.
Yeah.
But they make it difficult. I was very surprised when I came over here and that there was TABs in the actual pub. Now, online gambling, there's a woman at the moment campaigning in Australia. She wants online gambling to be banned from being able to use your credit card, because it's putting people in the height of debt, but like on credit. And I was like, whoa, I'm even surprised that they're allowed to do that. And then, like, you know, I thought you'd have to use an Access account, but people can actually just log in a credit card, like. So they're...
I didn't think you could do that.
You can log it. There's a woman, there's an MP at the moment in Australia, and she's trying to get the... This only came up the last couple of days, like, so it's a very interesting question, like. For me, I don't think you need to ram it down people's faces, but obviously sporting companies, there's big money in it. You're now getting sporting companies from all over the world. Asia, America, all getting their fingers into the EPL and everywhere. I think, is it France that have banned it?
France has banned it. I think you'll see a fair few countries do that over the years.
The Premier League are doing it now from the 25-26 season. You can't have it as your front of shirt sponsor anymore.
Well, you can't have it as your front of shirt sponsor, but I am certain I've seen it on... I don't watch a lot of Liga anymore, but I'm pretty sure you still see it on the advertising boards inside the ground.
Like, you're not allowed to advertise alcohol in France after 8 p.m. either. That's why sometimes when you see the Champions League games, like, say, Liverpool back in the day with Carlsberg, they'd have to remove the Carlsberg playing over in France.
Yeah.
It's funny what countries accept and don't accept, isn't it? You know, we'll have VB on the front of a NRL jersey for New South Wales team, which I always found hilarious. Victorian beer on a New South Wales jersey playing Queensland. Yeah. I don't know if people see the irony in that.
Just the last thing I'll say on this as well is, I was reading as well, which is something I'm not surprised about, but I didn't actually know it as a fact. For all the countries in the world per capita, Australia loses more money per person than any other country in the world.
Mm. And before Rhino comes in, it's, you know, I'm the token Aussie on the pod. It's part of growing up in Australia. It's like, the footy's on. Oh, I'll bet you $5. Like, even amongst family members and stuff, I'll bet you $5 on the footy. And the gambling has always been... you can't have a good time out with your mates unless you have a punt on the game and stuff. And that's how it's been sold for years. So it's become a real cultural part of Australia. And the reason I brought up the pokey side of it is a lot of sporting clubs in Australia are getting rid of the pokies. There's a massive revenue stream for them, but they see the cultural effects. And so the AFL clubs that have got rid of their pokies, I say kudos to you.
No, since online gambling has come in, though, it's changed the landscape altogether. Like, every country is massively affected now. I just noticed when I first came over, I just noticed it particularly over here, because you could bet in the pubs. And, like, and this isn't an addiction podcast or anything, like, but I went down to do my football bets on a Saturday, and you'd see some people in the TAB, and you can just tell they've been all there, and they've lost everything they had. And you just look at them and just think, sad, man. Sad. If you ever want to learn about gambling, read Paul Merson's book. It's an absolute.
It's a really good read. Yeah. Really good read. I think a lot of football clubs could use that space on the shirts for a much better, you know, companies or charities, like with our Acorns Association. And I love that. You know, we had Acorns on our shirts for a season or two there, and sort of raising the profile of that charity, making money for the charity. And I just think a lot more clubs should be going down that avenue. I understand why they don't, with, you know, money in football and how important there is that the sponsorship money coming in that these gambling companies provide. So I do understand, you know, you can't have it both ways. If you want your club to be financially successful,
finding the best players and the best wages, like has to make money.
That's right. You've got to have that sort of input from these clubs. But I just think those Acorn shirts are still some of my favorite shirts that we've had. And I just love the idea behind having a charity on your shirt and raising that awareness. And
Barcelona done it with UNICEF for years.
Yeah.
No, they have Spotify because they got into financial strife, you know.
Yeah, and one thing I have noticed, moving from the UK to Australia, is the amount of advertising on, you touched on this, Paul, you know, for gambling and betting before games, just before the game starts. You know, you can obviously do the individual bets now, like the spot bets, and there's just so many windows where, you know, when AFL's playing, they have quarter time, then half time, they've always got like the newest odds come up, and it's
like
I think the biggest thing for me, guys, is the effect it has on kids.
Desensitized to it living over here. But then when I went back to the UK in February, I was like, actually, there's some sports, some betting ads on in the UK, but nowhere near as much as what there is in Australia.
It's big over here, man. As you say, even when I go home, like when I was home last August, like everyone likes a bet, like, but it's not rammed down your face. Like, it's not everywhere you turn. Like, it's a bit more of a choice at home. I'm not saying that's the case with the online betting, but what I mean, when you're sitting down watching the TV, you know.
Yeah. Look, great question, Jay. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think on my final note on it is that I think they look tacky. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But it's funny with sport. We go and spend $100-odd on jerseys, right? And we are walking billboards, not only for our club, but the sponsor on the front and back. We're the walking billboards for these.
So clubs. True.
We are paying to make other companies' money. It's just insane if you think about it. But that's why I love things like the NFL jerseys, right? I've always been a massive fan because they don't have their advertising is Nike, who actually manufacture the shirts, if you think about it. They don't have any advertising on their shirts. It's the number of the player on front and back.
No, true. But they do massive advertising.
I can think of about that.
But if you watch like an NFL game or whatever, like the thing bloody stops every 20 seconds to advertise stuff. Like it's crazy. I can't even watch a game because what I mean is, like, if you watch it like an American broadcast of an NFL game, man, it literally stops every few seconds.
Oh, look, agreed. I just think it's the greatest game of chess in sport. It is literally people trying to outguess each other with set plays. I love it.
Oh, no, I'm on about the advertising, not on about the actual game itself. Yeah. Like, I mean, how many times they stop the actual broadcast to show you an ad, like, you know?
No doubt in the world, mate. We had a question from T. No Coda is his name. And we've answered that one, mate, but we appreciate it. Thoughts on the possibility of Alemani coming to the club? Mate, I think we can all agree, and you'd agree, it's just exciting times. I'm honestly, I think you guys might have felt the vibe through what I was writing, but I think it's one of the greatest signings, potential signings we've had in decades. I'm just bursting. I'm serious. Mike Knott, not with a K. Mike Knott 10. He says, apparently Villa have put a $20 million price tag on Cameron Archer. Should Middlesbrough get promoted? They want him. Should Villa cash in or keep? If so, how much game time is he going to get? He's doing really well at Borough, and we were all excited for him. I can't really answer this one because I don't know what Emery's thoughts are. I think we need depth. I think if Archer's coming along, maybe that is his level. I don't know. I'm going to leave that one to you guys. So $20 million, I don't know. $20 million doesn't seem that much anymore for an up-and-coming player.
For me, I'm sort of looking at it and thinking, you know, $20 million for a homegrown talent is direct profit for us. And with, obviously, Alemani coming in and Emery.
And financial fair play.
Financial fair play. At this point, if someone had a gun to my head, I'd take the $20 million just for fact.
You know, gun to your head to take $20 million, righto.
Yeah. You keep or sell. I would sell at this point. And yeah. I would love to see Cameron Archer make his mark and get into the Villa team. There's nothing better than seeing homegrown players getting in to the team. And, you know, watching JJ is brilliant week in, week out. But the reality is a lot of these players won't make the grade. Yep. And under Emery, I think that $20 million could be put to good use. And for me, ideally, Spud's touched on this a lot of times, and it's a really, really good point that ideally he stays at Middlesbrough and they get promoted on. He stays on loan, gets that experience. But for me, if I had to answer it today, I would take the $20 million. I would back Emery and Alemani in to get the right players in the door.
I do have a thought on it, and I'll wait for you, Spud.
My thought on it is, if Emery is, which I think he is planning to buy a top level striker, and the Cameron Archer isn't going to play much. He might play 10 minutes, might play the odd Carabao Cup, but there's enough players there that we'll probably have to play those games anyway. I always say, as Rhino just touched on, if Borough get promoted, then I think the smart move would be to loan him for a year. And then see how he gets on. It's up to him then, and if he makes it. But with the money on the table, if you are gonna be buying a top level striker, then you'd have to box clever like Man City do, sell him to Borough, but put a buyback option on him for the first 2 years. So if he does flourish in the Premier League, you're getting him back at a cheap price, like Man City have done with many players. You know,
because that's a great call.
That's how you protect your assets. You know, like Chelsea have done with Tammy Abraham, that they could. Take it back for a certain price and before a certain date, and then it goes up in stages. That's how you run a business. That's how you make sure that the guy you have raised since he was 9 or 10, that you're not just giving him to someone else. If you think that there's a player there, sometimes you do have to leave them go and play football. And sometimes you can't hold that player back with loans all the time, you know?
No, I think that's actually a really great point. I hadn't thought of that, but one thing, Spud, I had thought of, and I know this is a really old school way of thinking. Yeah. I think if you're good enough, age doesn't come into it. And sometimes, sometimes we keep giving people these chances. We haven't been burnt by too many. In recent years, we haven't been burnt by too many sales. Like, I'm Jack Grealish now. He's really playing beautiful football. Like, it took him a little bit of time to get his feet on the ground. And he is just flourishing. He's become the footballer now that we all knew he was. And I find it a personal pleasure, except when he's playing us, to see how well he's playing at the moment.
I'm just slow to throw my hat on Archer like a lot of the fans are already, because like the level difference between the Championship and the Premier League is huge. And I would like to see him playing a year in the Premier League before you make any decision on him. So he's not going to get that year playing with Villa. I don't care what anyone says. He's not going to come in and oust Ollie Watkins or the next big striker we come like. He's not. He's just not like. So
guys, question on notice, as I do to you every week. Right now, you are offered $20 million for Cameron Archer and he can never play for us again, or John Duran. Who would you take the $20 million for right now?
Archer. I keep Duran.
Yep. And for the financial fair play, what about you there, Rhino?
Yeah, I'd go the same. I just think, yeah, the financial fair play is one big point, being that he's a homegrown talent, it's pure profit. Yeah, I'd go Archer, I'd sell Archer, keep Duran.
Jan Duran is brilliant for the Premier League. Like, I've seen, he's a big young fella. Like, and if Emery can get his clutches into him, like, send him out in the year on loan, he rips it up like that. Mm-hmm. He could be a Villa striker. I've seen Archer play in the flesh a couple of times over here now, and he looks very lightweight against big centre halves. Like, he really does. We've seen him off the bench over in Brisbane. And I know that height isn't everything, but I just think that Duran is going to be able to handle himself better in the Premier League. Archer. Yeah, I don't know. Look, it could be a huge mistake, but for me, if there's, I think we'll get more than 20 million from him, to be honest. And
I think that's what I was saying before. I think $20 million for an up and coming player now is
it's a bit low. I think if they do get him, we're going to get more money than that. But I do think insert the buyback option.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
The really, really good question as well. Billy Wiz, a regular, any idea on the financial status of the club? Some say we are losing millions, while others say the opposite. Look, we would have absolutely no idea. And this is no go at you, Billy, but who are the people saying we're losing millions and who are the others saying the opposite? I had a look back. I did cheat on this one, boys. I don't usually go, but this question intrigued me. So the reason I did this is I went back and looked through when we release our financial figures. Mm-hmm. We either release them just before the Premier League seasons are done, and so it's normally anywhere between March and May, or they release it after the season. And so I don't believe we would have any idea. I believe that the owners we've got in place are very well off. I think we're doing things, we're spending money. So our balance sheet, we're spending money. I'm not talking about players, boys. I'm talking about the development of the ground costs a lot of money to do these plans. The buying the overseas clubs, those kind of things would cost money. I don't consider that potentially a loss. We're not getting crowds of like 15 or 20,000. We're not like our crowds haven't dropped off or any like when we were going down. So, look, for me, I don't know. I don't like the term losing millions. Like, I suppose what I mean by that is we're not, our crowds aren't down. I believe our shirt sales, everything like that are through the roof. So I think we're pretty well positioned. I don't know what you think, boys, but it's a pretty tough one to answer from the outside.
It is a tough one to answer. The one thing that I do want to touch on financially is some of the players who have come in recent windows and reportedly on quite big contracts. You know, obviously Danny Ings has now been moved on, but you've got Luca Dean, Coutinho, Dendonka as well, as apparently on a fair bit of money. I think this is where the big picture financially, I'm not really sure, but I do think this summer, I think we'll start seeing some of these people moved on and replacements bought in, et cetera. And I think this is where this Emery and Alemani, obviously, if that gets over the line, that'll be one thing they look at, is that's the wage structure there, I think, is a bit lopsided for us at the moment. I think there's good players there on not a lot of money, and there's some players there on a lot of money and have come in on big contracts. I think the balance needs to be shifted a little bit within the squad, and I think that will happen gradually. Not easy to do, getting players off the books on big money, but I think we'll see a bit of focus around that. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of those names go out the door.
Well, guys, earlier in the year, they did do a just looked it up right now. So earlier in the year, they were looking at clubs with the most debt in early this year. So Everton had $58 million debt. Oh, God, they're in massive trouble. Southampton, $62 million debt. They're in massive trouble because, you know, Everton's just building that new stadium as well. West Ham don't want to go down because they're $89 million in debt. We're talking pounds here, guys. Liverpool were $232 million. Leicester, holy crap, if they go down, they're going down and they're going down and they're going down because they're $237 million in debt as of March. Newcastle United, $338 million in debt. We know that will be wiped out in a not very long time. Brighton, $434 million debt. Manchester United, $424 million debt, but they've got a lot of money coming in pretty soon. Tottenham were the real surprises here, $726 million of debt at the moment. And Chelsea, as we all know, 1.6, sorry, 1.3 $4 billion debt. So we're nowhere near that at the moment. If we're just going by the, you know, the recent, I think that was in February this year, that, that table.
Yeah, that comes out. That's what I was going to answer there when it came to my turn. Like most clubs are running at a loss. That's why financial fair play was brought in to allow you to, like, obviously we don't know the ins and outs, as you touched on, Paul, just from what we've been able to gather is financial fair play allows companies a certain amount of losses. So, but the problem is where we're winning, I think, towards other clubs is our owners didn't levy the club against the loan to buy us. They bought us themselves. So that's where we're huge. That's where the big problem with the Glazers come in and stuff. They're taking dividends out of the club because they had to take a loan against the strength of the club's assets to buy the club. So that's obviously where the United fans are up in arms over. Not that I think they can complain too much. I think Glazers have invested handsomely in their squad. It's just been spent badly. So I think we're in a good, healthy position that way. Christian Purslow was part of the board that built the FFP in the UK. So yep. I think if he doesn't know, then nobody probably knows. I think we're fine. I don't see how they'd be putting all these structures in place if they were struggling. Like, we haven't got Dr. Tony in charge anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if we're losing a few million a year, whatever it is. I can't see us that we're running at a loss with millions every week. It's just that wouldn't be sustainable.
I looked at previous years as well, and we were one of the clubs with the least debt. We were running at a very healthy profit and loss statement, except for if we had gone down a few years ago, or only a couple of years ago, really, if we had gone down, we would have been in big trouble based on financial fair play, even though it was just the way we'd set up our funds at that point.
It was wrong when we came up, Paul, I think in 2008. Dr. Tony gambled on us. We basically did to the championship what Paris Saint-Germain done to France, just took all big names, as big names you could get in the championship, just gave them the biggest wages. We were buying all the best players, Ross McCormack, whoever, all the best players in the championship, giving them huge wages, gambling on that, them to get us up and then to restructure from there. But then obviously we lost. And then he got put in the thing. And that had 3-year implications after. So if we'd went back down then, we'd have been destroyed.
Oh, we weren't going to. I'm just looking at that question. Was a great question, Billy, as always, mate.
Very hard one to answer, though, because we don't know the ins and outs. So we'd be just really giving a guess opinion without it being an actual intelligent opinion. Like, we're just
no.
I don't know enough about football.
But what it has, and you know, boys, from being on the podcast with me, I actually love the financial aspect of it. So I love the financial aspect. Spud loves the tactics, and we've got Tess and Rhino, who are the all-rounders there and have knowledge of all of that. And I go and study the finances of clubs because I just find it intriguing. But that was a great question. It really opened up for me, boys, how much trouble some of those teams down the bottom are. If Southampton, Leicester, Leeds, any of those clubs,
Everton for me, man, Stadium, they're putting some money into that. People like Tottenham and Arsenal, like, built stadiums, and it took them a long time, and they were nowhere near relegation. Imagine actually going down, you know.
Some of these teams that are going down are not like some of the teams in recent years that have bounced back up. I think some of these teams that are going down, they're either going to drop down another level, or they're not coming straight back up for a long, long time.
They say you've, because of the parachute payments, they reckon in retrospect you have about 3 years to get up. If you don't get up in those 3 years, trouble starts to hit you massively. And there's prime examples of that, like Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday, Man City,
Everton Stadium, that millstone around their neck, that makes that parachute payment is kind of like stay on par, as opposed to being able to dominate the championship.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, thankfully we're not involved in that. So when I hear people complaining about us trying to take the sporting director from Barcelona, that's why I laugh.
What kind of times that is? Oh, boo-hoo, Barcelona, whoopee-doo. You've had all that success for all those years. Woo, you had Messi playing for you. Oh, my God. Anyway, sorry for those having a talk about it. I did actually watch a Barcelona page with subtitles, and they're furious. They're not furious at us. They're furious that they think he was the right man to lead them out of troubles. And they are saying, from the limited stuff I watched, they're really pissed. They think he's the right guy for them. So that says it. That's an even bigger coup for us. Ian Orman asks, Ian Orman 5, now that we're down to a game a week, will they be spaced out enough to allow players to recover and not be so leggy? There's not enough games left for that to really come into play. I don't know what you boys think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you said, we've got four games left. I don't think there's a lot of games there. I do think we'll start seeing some rotations just out of necessity. I think some players are really hanging on. Ashley Young being one, given his age and the amount of minutes he's had to play this season, with Cash picking up a few injuries over the course.
I warned you, boys, he was going to get absolutely shattered.
He's done a brilliant job, though, 100%. And he's done an amazing job at that age. And the nick that he's in at 38 is just incredible. And you know, can't begrudge him starting to sort of slow down a little bit. So, yeah, I think we will see some changes, but just out of burnout, to be honest. I don't think we'll see wholesale changes. I don't think we've got the squad to do it, or the depth, I should say, to do it, of quality to swap players around. But I think we'll see some changes.
Well, I still think that that week-to-week break, even with four games, is going to help them, though, because he can allow give them a few extra days recovery during the week. You know, it's got to help them to some degree.
Yeah,
as you said, like Ashley Young trying to play a Tuesday. Now, this was the third time in what 6 weeks that we had a three game in 7 days.
Yes,
and we've been carrying injuries at times, so it's the same players doing that over. And you have to remember too, like they would have taken a lot of information on, like they're like a big change. So there was a bit. They're probably mentally drained a bit too, you know. Because like the one thing I will say though is like that run had to come to an end.
Oh, and definitely.
Like it might look like a no, but I'm glad it came then in, no, not against Spurs, because it's much more important that we beat Spurs than it was that we beat United.
Well,
and there's no way we're ever going to go the season unbeaten. So I think this week break could refresh us like a little bit. I just hope we can get just even one or two back just to sit on the bench.
Yeah, we're desperate for just one or two, aren't we? Like a Cash or a Kamara, or just to come back in and just add just a little bit of quality and just a bit of an option from the bench.
I knew as a podcast, like we always thought Kamara was going to be a loss, and they've really managed to run.
Yep.
Do well without him. I think that United game was the first game we really missed him, because we had no one to take the ball in the tight spaces that United were closing down, because that's what Kamara's good at. I think
that was really obvious, actually.
Yeah, and Dendonker just couldn't do that. Dendonker was really good against Newcastle, against the high press constantly, and he was able to get his foot in. But United were trying to control. It was a slow-paced game, and I think if we had Kamara in there just to take the sting out of things and just get our foot in the ball for 10 minutes, slow things down, that's what he's really good at, like someone to go back and take the ball off the centre-backs. And I just think out of the 10 games, and it's easy to say that in a loss, but I think it was the one game we really missed his
style. No doubt in the world. And you could see that was really obvious, Spud, when Konsa didn't make any movement forward. I thought he played well, but he didn't come forward like he normally would. And Mings was really hesitant. Because I always say to you guys, I actually like when Mings takes the ball on, and he started to do a few runs and stopped. And that surprised me. And I think Kamara would have been the perfect outlet through the middle there.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
So if you could have had Kamara and even Cash, like just to give Young a proper break, because Callum Chambers, look, I'm not slating him, but like, he's not a European chasing footballer anymore. Like, he'll come in and do a job for you, but Matty Cash is going to offer more, like in that role. Mm-hmm.
And especially not at right back as well, you know, Chambers is a big lad, his mobility and his speed, he's not a Cash or a Young, is he, in build or in those attributes? So it's not his favoured position either. And like you say, but he's good for plugging certain positions, but I don't think right back is one, really.
Even when United tired towards the end of the game, when we came back into it, he hasn't been great, but that could have been a great time to have Bailey coming off the bench with pace just to fight in their back, because they were knackered, because they played a lot of football, United do, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, they did tire the last 10-15 minutes as well. So even though Bailey, like, look, we know he's hot and cold, but that kind of game could have been perfect for him, just come in a bit pissed off that he's not playing 15 minutes.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
so it's definitely been affected, like.
I think the games, even previous to that, I think Bailey's been a bigger miss, even though his form hasn't been great. I think our front sort of, our front 3/4 have sort of needed a bit of a chop and change. Like a Bailey coming off the bench would have been ideal against Fulham, Bournemouth, where we've sort of been, you know, we've won and we've got through those games, you know, just about got through 1-0. But I think he would have been a really good option. I think, you know, like we've already touched on, Buendia's sort of hit the skids a little bit, had a fantastic season, probably. one of his best patches in a Villa shirt for sure. But I definitely think Bailey coming on in some of these games would have been a real weapon. And yeah, he's been missed.
Guys, come on. Bailey's got more turnovers than a McDonald's part-time worker.
Ren, I agree with you because
he's got more turnovers than a I can't say a nationality, but he's got more turnovers than a young prostitute. He's got more turnovers than, you know, I'll leave it at that one. He's got more turnovers than apple pies. I don't know.
Well, Rhino's right, though. Like if Bailey had been fit, he probably would have started a game or two even.
He would have. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Mark Smith, through our Aussie Villains group chat, and thank you, another regular, what's your thoughts on what Rio Ferdinand said about Unai and Villa? I think we have rattled the big boys and it shows how far we've come. Also, I don't think we need a major overhaul in the summer. Two or three world-class players will be enough to add to the squad. What are your thoughts? Well, we'll break that up into two parts. First of all, Rio Ferdinand's a bit of a turd. So him having a go at us, I started to take offence, and then I thought, I just can't be bothered. The world, you know, life's too short.
I'll let Rhino answer this, because if I start talking about Rio, no, I get upset and going
to
I'll let Rhino talk about this.
I was exact same, Paul. When you listen to Ferdinand talking on, you know, when he's co-commentating or he's in the studio, I should say, I've never really rated him from that point of view in the media. And when he was coming out with those comments, I just thought that's typical Rio Ferdinand and his attitude when he was a player and still is now, just a bit of a childish sort of, yeah, I've got no time for him, to be honest. So, yeah, wasn't too bothered. And if we rattle their cages, so be it. I'm happy with that.
We're going to be rattling over the next few years. We're going to rattle a lot harder than that, Rio. So get ready, you Muppet head.
The other part of that question, Paul?
Really good parts of the question. I think we've spoken about it almost the whole season since Unai's come in. He said here, Mark said, I don't think we need a major overhaul in the summer. Two or three world-class players will be enough to add to the quality. Holy crap. What are your expectations there, Mark? I love it. Two or three world-class players? I'll have that every single season, please. If we got two or three world-class players, that would be an unbelievable summer. I hope that... His other part was, where do you think? A right back, a striker, another number 10? Yeah, we'll take all of those, mate. World class.
Yeah, I think we're touching this quite a few times right now, haven't we? Where we're we don't think the squad needs massive surgery. Like, it just needs a couple of people to come in and challenge that starting 11. So then your bench automatically gets stronger from that, you know?
No, I think, look, I don't mean to be facetious, Mark. I do enjoy the question. I'm actually a little bit stronger than the boys. I think our turnovers will be far bigger than we think. And I think you guys touched on it before. Mm. The guys on the big, big wages. Danny Ings didn't just go. We don't just let a striker go in that regard, right? But he looked, I've watched him, and he's looked slow. I know he scored for West Ham, but he's just looking slow. There's no way he plays in Unai's kind of way. I don't know who else is going to move on. I think we're touching on people like Dan Donker.
I think you will see a few movements out purely on some of those inflated wages. And being that there haven't been Unai Emery's men coming in, that he's going to have a bit of room to chop and change. And I think Luca Dean, Coutinho, Dan Donker would be three off the top of my head that I would say... likely to go out the door. And I know it's good to have Luca Dean there as a, you know, a really good backup to Alex Moreno, but I just don't know on his wages whether the club will hold on to that. I totally agree with what Mark says, and, you know, good question that we have touched on, but yeah, brilliant to hear it again. But I think quality over quantity. Let's get two or three players who can really improve this squad in. Like we've seen with Kamara this season, a player of that quality really steps us up a notch. And if we can get one or two of that ilk, we can really push on under Emery, I think.
Guys, we're going to see, and I can tell you, we are definitely going to be seeing a very continental team in the next few years. You know, getting Emery and his pipeline of players through Spain, now getting the Barcelona football director, having the pipelines in America, Egypt, Portugal, you know, all things like that. We are not going to recognize this Villa team in a few years' time. Like, It's going to be so exciting. We keep reading every single day about the potential players. And I look at the teams going down, and we look at the Leicesters, or we look at, you know, different teams, and everyone keeps going, oh, which players would you grab? Do you want to know the honest truth from me? If we want to be a top four team and a completely different team and take other teams by surprise, don't take any of these players. Don't take, I know you're going to touch on some of them. I know you will. I say don't take any of them. Let Emery bring in the guys who are going to be on much smaller wages to start with, that are going to be, no one's going to have seen them. Who saw Marino playing the way he has? And how long has it taken teams to sort him out? It's taken what? Man United sorted him out on the weekend. Because they've only just started to figure out what he's doing. If we bring in five or six players that no one knows except these guys know, we're going to be so hard to beat.
Yeah, but see, I think, Paul, I agree with what you're saying, and we're definitely going to see a few of them. But I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see some good names from England, not necessarily English players, but English-based players.
Yes.
Because Mourinho, was absolutely a gem, like a diamond in the rough, but they could take a risk on Mourinho because we had Luca Dean. He didn't have to settle and hit the ground running straight away because Dean was more than adequate left back. And then he came in and hit the ground running. You can't do that with five or six players because Chelsea are the prime example of that. You can't. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to settle and hit the ground running. There'll definitely be a couple of gems come in, but I still think you're going to get one or two English, Premier League based players signed as well. Decent names.
Oh, look, you're not going to say no to a Madison.
Yeah, or
that style player,
Harvey Barnes, whoever. Yeah. I don't know who it is, but I just don't think you're going to see five or six players come in and one hit big names that haven't played in the Premier League. I think you could see three or four, maybe, but I think you're going to see one or two that are already settled there because
I can handle that, I absolutely agree that we're going to get one or two, or at least one from a team going down.
Yeah.
And I think your balance there of three or four coming in from, you know, other high levels, I think is exactly right. I think that ratio may be 35 to 65%. I suppose my point is that if we're going to make the top four, we are going to get players that no one's ever heard of. You look at Man City's and you look at the Arsenals and you look at those teams, no one knew half of those players coming into the teams before they started starring. They didn't know them. None of us knew them. Haaland, yes, of course. But so many players, their names now that are big-name players, we didn't know them before they started kicking off. Go through the squads. You tell me who you knew beforehand, because I certainly didn't know half the players.
Well, from Man City?
Oh, not from Man, but from any of the big teams. Quite a few of the players, I had no idea who they were before they came in.
Well, for the Man Cities and Chelsea's, I would have heard a lot of their players. Arsenal, right, had a few too that I bought. Or even Arsenal, sure. I knew all them, Jesus, Zinchenko, they're all coming from Man City and stuff.
Yeah. But
Odegaard, Odegaard was around for a long, long time.
But you're an absolute pundit of the game, right? I'm talking the everyday Villa supporter and so forth. And we're not saying I'm better than them. I am on exactly the same level. They wouldn't have heard of half of these players at these clubs. But honestly, I know your football knowledge is brilliant. But I'm talking the everyday punter would have no idea who some of these people are.
Yeah, I suppose. I know what you're saying. I'm just saying that because I watch a variety of football, I suppose. But surely people have heard of De Bruyne before he signed. I think City and Arsenal's big signings are names people have heard of. I know what you're saying. You're getting a couple in here and there who people wouldn't have heard of, John. But I think the big boys people have heard of, they're the ones that are the game changers. But Moreno. But you're right about Moreno. I'd say a lot of Villa fans probably hadn't heard him before.
Well, look, I just think it's exciting times. All of us saying we don't need major signings, right? I just think that if you're going to be top four, they have to be.
They just have to be. I think the important thing is balance, though, isn't it? And not just getting bodies in or players in for the sake of getting them in. And, like you've seen this season, you've seen teams bringing in rafts of players, whether that's Nottingham Forest, Chelsea, you know, these guys have just bought and bought and bought, and it's very hard to get the team to gel and to work together in a short space of time, because there's no time in football at the top level, is there?
Managers don't get the time anymore.
No, it's a results-driven game, so you understand why these managers buy top-quality players in, but it has to be the right fit for the club first, doesn't it, as well? Yeah. You know, these players got to be the right attitudes and right people coming into the club who don't disrupt what's already there, but also add and improve to what's there. But one position for everyone's sanity, can we get a backup goalkeeper?
Oh, God, yeah.
Please, please.
Yeah, that's a good call. Another good question, Mark. We do appreciate it. Mark does have a question for this week, which we'll cover in a minute. It's basically about the team and some changes for this week, which he always has some good stuff here. Because I just want to put it in perspective. Chelsea have spent more money this season than we can ever remember being spent in the Premier League, right?
Mm.
Now, I know they won't. I know that they won't get relegated. But they've got Bournemouth this week and Forest. So they should get points out of one of those two. But they've then got Man City, Man United and Chelsea. Now, I'm just saying, they have spent more money than almost any club in the world, right? They are 9 points clear of relegation right now.
Jesus.
It's unbelievable. What? Unbelievable that they haven't got to 40 points yet, and it's May. It's incredible. Yeah. Like, that's just...
But how scary is it? What if one of those, you know, what if in the next game or two, just say the absolute unbelievable happens and they only get 1 point, right, out of Bournemouth and Forest. And, you know, I think we all think they'll get more than that. But if they only get 1 point out of those games, they're on 40 points, right? And it's just scary to think. I mean, they won't, but it's scary to think they are so much closer to relegation than anyone would have ever thought. They are 9 points clear of Forest.
Thomas Tuchel has basically kept them up with the points he got at the start of the season.
Oh, my God. Honestly,
100%.
They have 9 points clear of relegation. Can you believe that? They have lost their last, what, 5 or 6 in a row, including Champions League games.
It's the time to strike, Paul, isn't it? Because I totally agree with you here about them pulling a few transfer gems out, because now is the time to strike for Newcastle, Villa. The Premier League has never been like this. Liverpool's got a bit of an ageing squad. Tottenham don't know what they're doing. Chelsea are all over the place. This is the time for Villa and Newcastle to strike. You're never going to have such a good opportunity. The next season or two, it has to happen. Because it only takes once to get into that Champions League and you're flying if you're managed.
Mate, we are putting in... We cannot put any more pieces in place at the moment, can we? Because if this football director has actually signed, if Emery continues to go the way he's going, the unlimited war chest is never going to happen, right? That's just not that. We're going to have
how you run a football club, exactly. Yeah.
We're going to have more money available than what we think, but I think we've got the right people in place to do astute investments. So you're right.
That's just the media using buzzwords, though, Paul, isn't it? Unlimited war chest. You know what I mean? It's just the headline grabbers. It's financial fair play just wouldn't allow that.
No, but there's never been more exciting time to be a Villa fan. I wasn't there, in 82. So
I think you're right, though, Paul. I love the fact that they're bringing in this sporting director who's got a knowledge of the Spanish league that we wouldn't I'd know all the main players there, but he's going to know young lads who are just on the brink of the first team, aren't even getting many starts for their fucking big clubs. Right, Villa swoop in, take that young fella who's out of contract. They're going to have knowledge of that kind of stuff. It's very exciting.
It's also the trust, isn't it? It's also the trust of having. You know, you go into a meeting and you've got Emery and Alemani, and you've got those guys with that experience. The language skills they're going to bring to these meetings, the knowledge of the continents. It's just scary.
It's the pull, isn't it? You know, these guys have worked at the top level and have, you know, operated at the top level and got good contacts throughout the game, which I think is a really important thing as well. You know, these guys know other people in positions at clubs, other players, agents, etc. And I think it opens up a whole different world of players that are available to us now, especially given that, you know, a club like Villa that has come back from the Championship, come into the Premier League, we've been there. We've had to buy a raft of players, you know, from the mid-table to Championship players to to fill the squad out. But now I feel like we've pushed past that stage. We're established again, and now we kick on again and go for that next level player.
Yeah, there's levels to it, isn't there? It is a ladder, like.
You have to take your time, don't you, and really sort of work through it, because if you get it wrong, it can set you back years. And some of these clubs, like you boys were just touching on, are in, you know, really dangerous situations where if they do drop, you know, they're going to lose their best assets, their best players. And it's very that league, the Championship, is a tough place to be.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Guys, we don't have a lot of time left on the podcast. So one of the questions I asked you, if we did make Europe, or when we do make Europe, and in Champions League or any other levels, what ground would you love to go and see Villa play at from against a European team? Like, so not Villa Park, we're travelling away. Where would you love to go?
I'm going to go, I might get his pronunciation wrong, Westfalen Stadion. Is it Borussia Dortmund Stadium?
No, that's my answer.
I've been to Allianz Bayern Munich Stadium. That's a brilliant stadium. And you know, that was really well set up inside, like with the facilities and stuff. So, and I've seen clips of obviously Dortmund and the yellow wall and just the way their fans have got, you know, the posters, the banners and stuff. So, yeah, for me, Dortmund away.
Yeah, that's me as well. I'm not even joking. That is 100% what I had. Over to you, Spud.
Obviously, growing up in Ireland, I have a massive like soft spot for Celtic. I would like everyone grows up like watching Celtic and a Premier League club. As I got older, I obviously don't follow them as much as I did when I was younger. You know, Aston Villa are my sole team now, really, as such. But when I was a kid, I was big into Celtic. Celtic Park is known for its atmosphere on a Champions League night. I would love to sit in the away end with a Villa jersey on and just soak up the atmosphere and watch Celtic and Villa play in the Champions League quarterfinal. It would just mean the world to me, you know.
Totally get that as well. So, yeah, look, guys who are listening to the podcast, put up your, you know, your ground that you'd love to go see Villa play in Europe. You know, for me, I've said the same as Rhino, and I love your reasons there, Spud. So we take on Wolves this week. I think the easiest way to do this is to do what we always do. Let's have a quick look at our lineup and then give our score predictions. And I think
Robin Olsen in goal, anyway. Yeah.
Sorry.
Robin Olsen in goal. Yeah.
I was serious. I think I'd rather have Mings in goal. I'm not joking. Okay, so let's go and have a look, guys, at our lineups, and we'll start at the back. You've said Olsen in goal. Okay. Interesting.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't see it not happening.
No. Back four, guys. What do we think there?
I think Dania comes in this week.
I do too. I've got him written down to come in for Marino as well. I think that'll be the only change in the back four for me, but given how leggy he was against United, I think he comes out for a bit of a spell. And given it's Wolves away, I think Luka Dean comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to go at us. People call it a derby game. I'll let people who've lived in Birmingham all their life tell me if that's a derby game, but it doesn't feel very derby-ish to me. It's a Midlands match, of course, but it's not like playing Birmingham, is it? Birmingham, is it? It's that's our only real derby in my mind.
Yeah, it's hard for me to answer that. As you said, I would leave the Brummies answer that because and you see a lot of them say it's not, so I just respect their decision on that. You know?
We'll let the Brummies tell us as well. So okay, so at the back, we think Young will be on the bench.
No, Young will start, I think.
Young will start right back, yep.
I think Dean is the only change in a back four.
Okay. And midfield?
I think McGinn might drop in next to Luiz, then Donker out, and I think you might see Traore come in or for that wide position then.
Do you think that's too deep for him?
For McGinn? No, I think he played that position quite a few games ago and played it quite well, actually. I don't think it's his best position, no, but I just think we might change here this week.
I think if Bailey hadn't got injured the same time as Kamara, we would have seen McGinn playing there a lot more. Like, you know, he's I think McGinn would have replaced Kamara as opposed to then Donker, but because Bailey got injured, because McGinn was in there and done a great job there.
Yeah.
So I don't see any change in the middle myself personally. But I think you, if there was a change, but that's what you're probably right. Right now, that's where it'd be McGinn come in there. But I actually think it's going to be the same, personally.
And what about up front, boys?
Same.
I've gone with, obviously, McGinn dropping in. I've sort of pushed Traore into the wide position, but then I've kept Ramsey, Buendia and Watkins. But I have made a note saying that I think Duran will get more minutes, though, this week. He got on the 75th minute against United. Yeah. I think he'll probably get more minutes again. I think they'll start to push him in a bit earlier in games now.
And what do you think? So you think Buendia's going to stay in the team this week?
I think he's enough credit in the bank.
I think with a bit of depth, I think we might have seen a couple more changes there. I think attitudinally, the last couple of weeks, I've been really disappointed in him. And we said it last week, and he did it again against United, having a go at his own players. Now, I know that might be just who he is and trying to motivate, but it kind of seemed a bit sulky again. Sorry, mate, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, all right, go on, keep going.
Yeah, I'm just not enjoying that side of him at the moment. But you can't, if that's what's fired him up and if that's the way he's playing, that's what gets him going, it's then hard to say don't be that. Mm. So, you know, I can't have it both ways.
You don't want to take that fire out of him either. I get what you're saying, Paul. But I think Buendia is the one who's benefited out of Bailey being injured, because I think that's why he's starting this week.
Yep.
I think after his last 2 weeks, if Bailey had been there, we'd be seeing Bailey this week. Or
I 100% whatever. Agree there. Yeah. I know I bagged Bailey before, but he certainly would have been straight in for me.
Like for that change.
There's four games to go, mate. You show us why we should keep you on for a couple more years. You show us how good you are. Because right now, if we had the depth, he wouldn't be playing for us next year, in my mind. No way would he. You cannot make as many mistakes and not chase back. And Emery will not have that in his team.
I think everyone deserves a second chance, though, like a full preseason. And if Emery decides after preseason there's no change and dropping, but like we keep saying this, you know, there's definitely something there, and it's like he's got this little draw for me. I don't know. It's like, you know, it's like I'm outside his bedroom peeking in at him because he's like, just show me a little more, Bailey, will you? I think
it's that kind of player, though. I think it's that kind of player that stops you being a top four team, because we do get caught up in the highlights and we do get caught up in those little bits. But the really good teams don't have those players who have two bad games and one good game. And I might be overrating the two bad games with one good game. It might be, you know, two and a half bad games.
I think it's good to have a maverick like that come off the bench. Someone in a game and stretch defence, but he doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to sit happily on the bench and come on for 15 minutes. I'd say it wouldn't take him long to get too moody around the place, and I don't think Emery will put up with that. I think his lack of tactical ability is what's going to kill him in the end for Emery.
I just love to see, I agree with you, the things that I'd love to see is when he loses a ball, he chases back like it's, you know, his life is on the line. But he seems to stay down, and we're then almost a player down. So often I've said that to you guys, because I specifically watch what he does, and he goes down, and he doesn't get up for like 8 to 10 seconds.
Sometimes you'd look, right, and Bailey'd be on the ground, and Buendia's there throwing his hands up in the air, and just like, boys, play the game, like, at the same time. You're just like, right, what's going on here, lads?
And look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he gets that preseason under his belt. He's fully fit. He's confident in his body. And he starts taking people on and we go, oh, hello. I'd love to see that, but I'm not going to hope. I'm not going to hold hope for that being the case.
Brentford in the 4-0 and like the 3-1 win against United, he was so good, man. Like that run he went on for Watkins' goal to make a 4-0 against Brentford when he picked it up on the left and he skipped past, I don't know how many of them, 3 or 4. Put in a perfect cross then. And so, like, he's got something, but he just consistency again, I suppose. But do you think this summer? I'm not 100% sold he will be.
I don't know what his wages are. I don't think he's on huge wages. So I think that will keep him in the team. And I think we will see some of the players that some people will be surprised at who will let go, but they're on such ridiculous weekly pay. You know, you're looking at players, and I'm not going to pick on any one player. I do have a couple names in mind. But when I heard their weekly figures, they're about $40,000 a week overpaid. I mean, that's, you know, that's a couple million a year. And if you get rid of three or four players, and that's $8 to $10 million you can spend on others, or increase pay of some of the players that are in the squad, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think he'll get another chance. And I'm like you, Spud, eternal optimist, mate. There's something there. And give him another preseason. Let's do it.
I'd love to agree with you, boys. I just think we've done that for too many years. I reckon we've done that for a good 25 to 30 years. And we've kept going.
I agree with you, though, Paul. I think there's other players. There's probably Bailey fits a little niche position where he's quite handy with his skill set, his pace and his finishing, where I think he's almost... I don't think we'll lose him. I think there's other players who will go before him, and I think he'll hang around for that fact. I don't think it's because of his performances, obviously, but I think there's other people on the wage bill that'll get shifted. And I'm with you, Paul. I think there'll be a few go out that people will probably raise their eyebrows with, but for the greater good of the club, basically.
Guys, there's this saying at my footy club who are really struggling, and I know it's your footy club in Melbourne, Richmond in the AFL, they're really struggling at the moment. But for a number of years, there was this saying, in Dimmer we trust. And he almost went out in 2016. He was almost sacked, and they kept him. And a year later, we won our first grand final in 37 years, right? Mm. And the reason I bring this in, and I hope we can say this for years and years to come, whoever goes out and whoever comes in, in Emery, we trust.
Yeah.
Because seriously, we've got the right people in play. We are just pundits. We are just fans. We have no bloody idea.
Yeah. Just because we're reading stuff. Uneducated opinion here. That's all we're giving. Like, we can only go off. We can only go off what we're seeing for 90 minutes on a Saturday. Like,
but all of this is fans. Us making judgments that Emery and Perslow and whoever comes in as football director, if we're lucky enough. I mean, we just have to trust that we've got the right smart people in place, and not go, oh, how'd they get rid of them? Oh, I can't believe we signed that. We just have to wait and see. It progresses.
We've touched off it a few times where we've said, like, just because Emery's getting the best out of these players, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the players he wants, you know?
No. Well, guys, we've gone fairly long here. We're into the Wolves game. We've talked about the changes. Let's give our scores. I've got to say, I had a shower just before the podcast because I'm going to go to bed, right, because I'm an old man. I had 1-0 loss in my head all day today, right? And I'm sorry, I don't normally do, you know, I don't normally get negative, but I had this 1-0 loss, just the season just peters away a little bit, right? Yeah. Had the shower and I've gone, oh my God, we're going to win 4-0. now what is that?
You don't need to tell us what happened in the 10 minutes of the shower.
I didn't touch anything rude. But Watkins scores all four goals and Watkins scores two of them from penalties. And one of the penalties, he slips over and the keeper dives the wrong way and he just gets his foot to the ball and it dribbles and dribbles and dribbles. The keeper tries to get back up. It crosses the line. The ref has to look at his watch. The watch doesn't work. So it goes to VAR and the VAR shows that it's just gone over the line and we get our fourth goal and we win 4-0. That is the most ridiculous goal description ever. If that happens, I'm buying lotto tickets. What's the scores, boys?
Difficult one. I've got a draw in mind. I think it could be... I'm going to change my mind as well, Paul. I'm going to go 2-1 Villa. I initially thought 2-2, but I'm going to go 2-1 with us away. Bit of a smash and grab, and I'll go Watkins and Traore to get the goals.
Oh, I love it. Love it. And what about you, Spud?
I think it's going to be a very, very difficult game, to be honest. I think we're going to win 1-0, but I think it's going to be very, very tough 1-0. I think it's going to take a lot out of us, to be honest, because Wolves are good at home. But I think we'll get over the line. Maybe a set piece or something. I'm not sure, but it's going to be a difficult game. 1-0 Villa.
Wow, 1-0 Spud. 2-1 Rhino. Paul with a ridiculous 4-0.
Hey, Paul, we all hope you're right, though, Matt.
Yeah, 100%.
I just, oh my God, I'm going to ring you guys. I don't care. It'll be 10 o'clock in Perth. I don't care if I wake up your babies. I'm going to ring you boys, because if that penalty happens and he slips over and the keeper goes the wrong way, I don't know if I might even just walk out the door and just walk for miles.
Paul, if that happens, if that actually happens, I'm just going to let you make all my future decisions in my life.
Oh, God, no. God, I want you to have a good life. I like you, Spud. I can't do that to you. Boys, it's been another fantastic podcast. I've got a little bit of editing to do. In saying that, we've covered some questions. We've looked at, you know, a really exciting potential signing for us. It's all real positive stuff, no matter what happens for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Again, just want to thank all the listeners for the questions. It really does mean a lot. Like, I really enjoy it. I love that aspect of it. Like, we always say, like, there's only so much reviewing and previewing you can do with games. Like, so to get those questions and answer content that we know that you want to hear. Yeah, I love that. So keep them coming.
Yeah, thanks to all the regular people who put questions, and also all to the new people putting questions in. It's, you know, it's brilliant getting a range of questions, and it keeps us on our toes.
Oh, definitely. Thanks for joining us again on another episode of Up the Villa, the Aussie Villains podcast. We would love your feedback. If you could give it, it'd be amazing. On Apple, Google, on Spotify, any way that you listen to us, it would be fantastic. We appreciate it. We love all our listeners. We love the Villa. This is Up the Villa, the Aussie Villains podcast.